more segment here with Dr. Jacqueline Murray, and she's also, for the listeners, an incredible expert on sexuality and masculinity coming into from the Middle Ages into today. And you know, I saw also an episode with where it was Gavin Newsom and friend of the show, my friend Tim Miller, and they were talking about, you know, the masculinity crisis and all that stuff. So I, like, we talked about this off air. I would love to have you back to talk about that subject too, because you're a freaking expert on that stuff as well. So
thanks, Mark. Yeah, love to.
Yes. So we were talking about all of the things, you know, mistletoe and wreaths, and it's interesting as you're mentioning these things, it's like, yep, check, got that. Yep, we got bows around the fireplace. Yep, got that. Got a Christmas tree. Got a wreath. Holy cow! Like, that's a lot. Hundreds and hundreds of years later, it still is impacting us today.
So, Mark, let me ask you, did you get a Yule log for dessert?
So, I've never had one. I'd love to eat one. Yes.
So those ice cream logs that we eat, Yule logs, I find that is one of the most curious practices that's endured at all. And there's that song, I forget its technical name, or, you know, its correct name, but it's got the line, Yuletide carols being sung by a fire.
Yes.
So,
yes.
What is Yuletide? And, you know,
and folks dressed up like Eskimos.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah.
So, Yule logs were a particularly Germanic and Scandinavian practice, and they go at the beginning of the darkness of the solstice and cut down a big tree and drag the tree into the house, into the fireplace. And they tried to keep the fire going with that one tree, pushing it further and further into the house.
Oh, my God.
And if they could keep it lit through the whole period, it would bring good fortune to the house. And this practice, you can see drawings in the 18th century of people pulling Yule logs along. But this also was Yule logs. Oh, I forget where I was going to go with Yule logs. Oh, well.
No, that's so
the origin of wassail.
Oh, because, yes.
Again, here we come wassailing. We have them in our Christmas carols.
What is that? Well, I have no idea what the hell that is. No pun intended.
It's a kind of ale mixed with honey. It's, you know, ale and honey. And they'd be drinking it and they'd be giving it to guests and so on. But they also, before they cut down the tree, anointed it with wassail, kind of recognizing that the tree was giving up its life in order to keep them safe through this dark solstice period.
Wow. It's
and so was.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, so wassail became, you know, one of the, it's just a fancy name for ale and with stuff like we have sangria and so on. Yes. So, you know, it's a drink with fruit and so on. And that became kind of associated as a Christmas drink because of this ancient practice with the Yule log and the wassail.
So when did, like, if way back Christmas was kind of like for the medieval folk, it probably wasn't a bank holiday, you know, didn't get the day off of work, paid holiday or anything. When did that really become, was it the 1223, you think, when people, it kind of clicked?
And in the 13th century, the church became more conscious that it had to do a better job of telling average believers what the faith was and how they believed in it and tell the stories better and more clearly. So it grows a lot after that, but it's still at the end of the Middle Ages, for example, in 1536, that the first Christmas tree was brought into Strasbourg Cathedral. Oh. And that's the first time that we hear of a real tree being brought into a place that with hard historical evidence. There's lots of thoughts that people were starting already before that to bring trees into their house. But that's the very first one. It was Martin Luther that suggested putting candles on it to illuminate the tree because, of course, they're all focused on the return of the light and Jesus' birth as the bringing light to the world.
It's interesting to, you know, I instinctively, you know, and I talk to my wife about this all the time. Oh, my God, it's so dark. I just can't wait till we get more light. I can't, you know, and it's like we have street lights and we have things that, you know, push out the darkness. But like you said it so perfectly. We have no idea what that was like and what a breath of, okay, we're past it. We're through it. We're getting, you know, I would want to celebrate that, you know?
Yeah, really. Because you know it happened last year, but do you really know it's going to happen next year?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you don't know exactly why it's happening, but you can map out how it happens across the year.
How many of like the Stonehenge's type things are out there? I know there's one in Appalachia, I believe.
Interesting.
You know,
I always think of that as a Northern European thing. Most of the stone circles are actually found in Scotland. There's over 400 of them. The stones of Callanish on the Isle of Lewis being the most well known, but there are a lot in Celtic areas. So I'm not sure if the Appalachian one would be indigenous and what its meaning would be. I don't travel across the Atlantic very much.
That's okay.
In my work.
I think there was one on like an episode of Josh Gates or something where it was America's Stonehenge says that they're like 4,000 years old or something like that.
Cool.
Yeah, it was really neat. But, you know, I think it's fascinating to, you know, you think of these people as such primitive folks, but I mean, they were pretty smart too. I mean,
yeah. Well, and look at all of the cultures of the Aztecs and the Incas and so on. And they were brilliant mathematicians, but they too were obsessed with following the sun.
Yeah. So when you look at Christmas and these types of holidays, it seems that, you know, medieval traditions are really just soaked all the way through them.
Mm-hmm.
Are there a couple that stick out to you as like, you know, make you smile or whatever? You see that and you're like, oh, I know, you know, what are the ones that you really kind of stick to?
Well, I have to say, I'm really captivated by how St. Francis's nativity scene has, the plays are done still in churches, and a lot of homes have little nativity scenes. And when I was growing up, sometimes they would move these three kings and the shepherds around.
Yes.
So, you know?
Yeah, we did that.
Yeah. And I think it's that story really invokes something in people's minds and in their hearts when they think of the whole situation and of the nativity and the, you know, no room at the inn and the difficulty of giving birth in that society without doctors and midwives and so on. I think it speaks to a deep part of human nature, and we see it when modern filmmakers and storytellers turn the story into a story of homelessness.
Yes.
Or, you know, the people who have nothing now. And it evokes the same spirit in us of caring for others and their situations.
There was a church, I believe, in Massachusetts that put mock ICE agents at the manger. And holy cow! I mean, what an image, you know.
So powerful.
Yes, and there's something about the story that really connects, like you say, with people. You know, someone mm-hmm. that doesn't have a lot of means, born to save humanity. You know, and mm-hmm. and that's that can connect with so many people.
Yeah, yeah. And it makes us want to be better people and care for those less fortunate and so on.
And I think that's kind of what's cool about Christmas is that you don't have to be a Christian to understand, you know, or you don't have to be a believer in Jesus to appreciate the kindness and the gentleness and the humility that the season can bring and bring out in people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree, Mark.
Yeah. So fast forward just a little bit, you know, the Charles Dickens version of Christmas. but that has some traditions that we don't have today, and the ones that we do. I think, so that was very closely created by, you know, a lot of those traditions as well.
Yes. You know, Dickens comes kind of in the mid-19th century, just when Christmas is really getting going, and it's a really big deal. For example, it was Queen Charlotte in 1800 that brought the practice of a Christmas tree to England.
Oh.
And in about 1846, a picture of Queen Victoria and Prince Albert and the children gathered around the tree, lighting the candles, and there's baubles on it, gifts under it. And that was on the front of an English magazine. 3 years later, it was on the front of an American magazine. Wow. But they took off the crown and they took away Prince Albert's mustaches. Uh-huh. To make them look more American.
That scans.
yeah. And so in the 19th century was kind of a big time for the development of Christmas. The original story that we call The Night Before Christmas was actually called The Visit from St. Nicholas.
Oh,
and
yes.
It was first published in 1823.
Awesome.
So we get a lot of our Christmas ideas and Santa Claus and so on.
Yes.
From that story.
Right. Dr. Murray, thank you. This was so cool. I would love to have you back again to talk about some of the things that we talked about earlier. But I really, really appreciate your time today and sharing that with us. And that was so cool.
It was a pleasure, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you.
I had a great deal of fun.
Yes. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon. We'll be right back on The Rational Revolution right after this. Just like yesterday.